The murder of two men forces their families to wrestle with impossible questions. Who is forgiveness for? Does everyone deserve a second chance? Follow season two of The Letter, Ripple Effect, at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to do you on the interview.
Don't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Yep. Hi, Brock and Salk, as we roll on here. Hi, good morning, Brock.
Oh, good morning, Michael.
What a day. What a game last night, huh?
What a series.
What a series win against
the Braves.
It
feels like playoff baseball.
Did it?
The last two nights certainly have.
Yeah.
You know, when you get a little crisp chill in the air, and I know the sun was shining yesterday. The stadium looked beautiful, and I know Hello Kitty was purring everywhere. You were up there just so excited. But just the style of the games, fast forward to October when there's a chill in the air and fall is in full effect, and pitching and elite pitching usually dominates elite hitting. And this is, coming into this game, an elite hitting Atlanta team, a lineup that Justin texted us working at the stadium the other night, like, whoa, this lineup is ferocious.
It's intense. They have a total of 3 runs in 2 games. 2 of them are earned. 1 of them should be. Yeah. Think about that. In 2 games, they have 3 runs. 2 of them are earned. Only 1 of them should be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they call Polanco's non-error an error last night in the 8th inning, I think neither of those runs ends up being earned, and you end up having given up 1 earned run in 2 games.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yes.
What this pitching staff is doing is truly remarkable. We're going to talk to the guy who's calling these games, Cal Raleigh, who I assume has a day off today. So Cal's going to join us at 8:30 this morning before the matinee, so he'll be up a little bit early, but not, you know, getting ready for the game as he would if he were the starter. So Cal's going to join us at 8:30 this morning, and he's seeing it, man. He's seeing 4 or 5 pitchers that just keep coming at you day after day after day, and each one of them brings a little something different, but enough similarity that doesn't matter who you are. Texas, no problem. Arizona, that's another team scoring a ton of runs. See you later. Atlanta, best offense in the league. Goodbye. Like, they just turn you away and send you home packing.
Yeah, and it's not as if you have seen just robbery at the wall. It's not as if there's just lasers hitting all over the field.
See,
there's
not as nice plays.
There have been, absolutely.
As, I mean, the guys, as there will be.
Yes, but it's not as if they've been robbed. It's not as if they're leaving here or these two games going, sheesh, I can't buy a break. I mean, that's a home run in 28 other parks. Oh, man, you know, Julio just, you know, stole one from me at the wall. No, like there's probably
a couple of line drives that hang up at T-Mobile that might be hit somewhere else. Maybe there's a double that gets tracked down. This is not a good doubles park. So look, the ballpark, the weather, those things will probably help a little. They've added a little bit on the margins. But for the most part, it's just been overpowering. And Luis was unbelievable last night. As good as George Kirby was on Saturday, Luis was basically just as good last night. And when you see him come out for the 7th inning, I was saying you and Justin and I were kind of chatting about it. Hey, do you bring him back out? Like, yes, you definitely bring him back out for 2 reasons. 1, you're going for the jugular in game 2. You want to win the series and then figure that game 3 is gravy. So, and you see it, right? When Scott brings in Munoz for a 5-out save like that, you're going for the jugular. You are winning this game no matter what it means for tomorrow. You've got to win this game. And they went all in on it, and it worked out, which is a good bet. But Luis not only comes back out for the 7th, he dominates it with like a few pitches.
Yep.
He conserves his pitches. He knows how to get through that lineup in the 3rd time through, right? And just, I thought it was a masterful performance last night.
Yeah, I thought his just pitch efficiency and his command, right? Even in the early bumps in the road, it wasn't a stuff issue. The stuff was pretty good, but it was just, you know, leaving a ball over the plate here. Mm-hmm. It was just wasted pitches there. It was some inefficiency here. And, man, these last 4 starts, he's been as dialed in. And you kind of sometimes with Luis, at least me, I do, maybe I'm projecting, but you kind of feel it right from the jump. Like, ooh, yeah, it's the Yankees. Oh, yeah, it's the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it's a big stage. Like, the bigger the stage and the brighter the lights, I know the end of September was not, you know, wasn't great last year, but, man, there have been enough moments here where you're like, yep, and you see it right from the jump. And with that fist pound, you saw it right from the end there in the seventh inning. The Rock was absolutely loaded last night.
Yeah, he was. Some good text coming in. Let's see. More importantly about the game last night, did Salk enjoy the food in the All-Star Club? I saw him limping around there last night. I was limping around.
What?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate being noticed. It's
did
always,
you bring your hot and cold packs?
I did not.
Like
no.
I do my board through the airport?
No, I did not.
Did you have your ice on your knee like Divish, you know, that ice pack that Divish was wearing spring training?
You guys missed it the other night. Divish lost his credentials, so they printed out like a gigantic one for him to wear on his neck.
It was like head sized for Divish.
It looked like a fat head.
That would have been very nice. Yeah, I was limping around.
Were you hobbling?
A little bit. I mean, you know, I'm walking, but not like as quickly as I normally would be. And I had 3 10-year-old girls with me, and as I told them, like, don't fall off the ledge, don't leave here and get lost, and don't vomit when you get home later after all you can eat ice cream. Like that,
sure.
Those are the rules. Yep. And I think for the most part, they were able to follow those rules for the most part.
Good.
I did say if they vomited that they just had to tell their parents that they had the flu. Like, I don't want to hear anything about how it was my fault. Just tell your parents you have the flu.
I put out a little tweet last night.
I know. I saw that because you're carrying the Mariners water.
No.
No,
that,
you are. No, Brock, you're a Mariner water carrier.
Salk, not
Brock,
that
I
one.
Saw it. You are a shill for the organization, Brock.
What's it
How
like?
Much are they paying you, Brock? I saw it.
Yeah,
I saw what you've been up to.
Yeah, my
trying
name.
Trying to shill.
How dare you, Brock?
My name doesn't have the same ring as you. John. Come on, John.
Come on, John.
You can't say my
you can
name.
Do it, John.
Gall.
I don't need this gun anymore. Old John
Salk, not that tweet. No, the tweet that said if the 4 Mariner starters were an IPO and you could only invest in one, who would you choose?
I think it was actually a pretty easy answer on Kirby, just because, you know, Luis is already in his prime and, you know, it's not going to last forever. Miller is still a wild card. That's like a penny stock. It could go in either direction still. And, you know, Logan's just a year older, right? Yeah. He's a little bit more mature. The reason it's that's funny, an easy answer for Kirby is just the upside potential.
Yeah, so 69% Kirby, 20% Logan. Part of that came out of, I was asking Titus as we were watching. I said, hey, man, if you could be any of these 4 guys as a starter, right? If I could say, Titus, this is going to be you one day. It is. You know, this is going to be you one day. Who would you want to be? He said, Bryce. I'm like, really? Over Logan? Yeah. He's like, I don't know. Yeah, I think it is. I think there's just a kind of a cool factor for teenagers with the way Bryce just kind of carries himself and throws absolute gas. He's like, that dude just throws gas. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, Kirby actually throws harder. I think Kirby's gotten up to 98, 99. He's like, I don't know, man. Just the style, just kind of what you just said, the flair.
Yeah.
That he just is like, I'm going to come right at you and you're just going to deal with it. So that kind of sparked my thoughts there. And yeah, you're right. Not surprising to see an overwhelming amount there for George Kirby, but what a testament to legitimately have those guys night after night, after night, after night. And how many nights in a row is it now?
Well, it's 18 nights in a row that their starter has given up 2 runs or fewer, which is just ridiculous. And you know, last night, I said earlier, it was a little weird when they started playing this.
So did Heather have the wheel ready for you?
The pottery wheel when I came home.
When you got home?
Salk was using soft serve in the All-Star Club. Everybody thought it was very uncomfortable. The amount of soft serve he was using. I had to be asked to leave. The girls had rules, but sure, apparently not Salk.
Every time he went up to soft serve, he played this on his phone.
Yeah. He's just holding it in his hands, molding it in the machine. He was like, excuse me, sir. Everybody else is trying to get ice cream. He's like, give me a minute.
Do you need sprinkles? No.
No.
I'm just gonna
you need
pull.
A chair.
I'm just gonna
turn it backwards. The only one who didn't have rules in there and then went off the rails quick.
Yeah. The rules are here for our protection, I would say.
That's why that text came in. I saw you eat.
The rules are here for your protection.
I saw you eat in their song.
All right. Mariners were tremendous last night, and they win another series. Kudos to Luis. Kudos to the Righteous Brothers. We'll come back with everything you need to know. It's Brock and Salk on CL Sports.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Mariners, Brock, you may remember, started the year 6-10. Since then, they're 11-3. They have been on fire. They've won 5 straight series, and that comes the latest against Atlanta, the fearsome lineup that they bring to town. And they've scored a total of 2 earned runs in 2 games, one of which probably should have been unearned. Luis Castillo absolutely dominant yesterday, about as good as he's going to get.
You know, the four-seam fastball from the slot he throws at is just such an effective. It's so hard to hit that pitch. And especially when the velocity is at 95, 96, or even 97 miles an hour. It's so different than anybody else. So, but he's got to have the slider, the changeup, the two-seam. It all kind of works together, but that's the pitch that's really been a separator. And against certain clubs, it's a really good matchup. You know, he can go at the top of the strike zone, and he gets great results there.
Aaron Goldsmith's going to join us later, and he was pointing out just how many fastballs they've thrown at Acuna so far, of all people in this series. Just like, yeah, we're going to find a way to get you out and just keep throwing you fastballs until you can handle it. You know who else's fastball's pretty good when it plays off his slider? Andres Munoz, and he got the job done last night. His first 5-out save of his career.
Trying to put away Kelnick, and the 1-2 pitch, swing and a miss and a slider, strike 3, and it's over. The Mariners hang on and win it tonight. 3-2 over the Atlanta Braves. They win the series, and the Mariners have now won 5 consecutive series.
You know, there's sometimes talk that Goldie will join us, as he will today, or Jerry will join us, and they'll just present these stats, these kind of next-level numbers, and you go, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming. Oh, geez, yeah, okay, wow. And then there's other times that your eyes, even from the All-Star Club or your couch, when you're watching it, and you're like, they can't touch that upper high fastball. Like, they just can't touch it. Like, Miller just kept pounding that zone, that upper quadrant of that box, you know, again and again and again. Like Marshawn Lynch used to say, over and over and over. And they are just pounding the upper strike zone. And when that velo, as Scott said, is 95 to 97, as it's been with Bryce and Luis the last 2 nights, good luck trying to catch up.
It's also funny, given the way our season started here, right? Talking all about spin. And are we going to get to a point where fastballs don't really matter anymore and it's just the whole world is all about spin? Yeah. And then here we are a couple of weeks later with the world's best pitching staff just throwing heat at the top of the zone over and over and over again. So baseball's funny, man. Just when you think you got it figured out, it tends to go in a different direction. Cal Raleigh deserves a lot of the credit here, though. He has done a heck of a job with his pitching staff. Scott mentioned it last night as well. He's going to join us a little over an hour from now at 8:30. And let's also throw a little credit at Jorge Polanco, another guy who's been struggling but got it done when he needed to early in last night's game.
There goes Rojas, 1-0. Swinging, it's out to right field. Hammered deep. It's back, 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 and over the wall for a home run. Jorge Polanco, number 4, puts the Mariners on the board. A 2-run blast. 2-0 Mariners.
I know we were all hoping that the walk-off was going to be the thing that got Mitch Garver going. He did not carry that momentum into last night's game much at all. But maybe eventually something's going to start to unlock here with Polanco. That is 4 home runs at least now that he's hit. Hopefully this is like the beginning of something, because that would really change things.
Well, you know, and I shot you a little note last night. The Mariners offense obviously struggling in a lot of areas, but middle of the pack. Just be middle of the pack. They're middle of the pack when it comes to home runs. They're hitting a home run a game. 30 home runs this year. And when they run into a home run with Garver, they run into a home run with Polanco, they run into a home run with Ty France. With this pitching, you win.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
The rookies are going to be here, Brock, for a little mini camp, which should be fun. I like this event. I like when they get the rookies together. It was always fun to kind of see them out there and just kind of see the body type, see how they're going to be used, or at least a first glimpse of that by the coaching staff. And this year is going to be really our first chance to see Mike McDonald in coaching mode and not just in press conference mode and see what that looks like.
And the energy on the field and the rest of the coaches. Just looking at a picture, all you see are kind of some of the snapshots and short little snippets of video right now. And there was a good shot of Grubb. He was just looking screaming, right? You can just see the veins in his neck as he's getting after it. And, you know, just he's got an edge to him, man. He's got a very different way than Shane Waldron, right? I mean, it is like Libby Montana versus, you know, your school up there in the Northeast, right? That very, very different level of intensity. And I, too, do, too, as well, like it, Salk, because these rookies, they feel good about themselves. Like, yeah, man, the NFL ain't that bad. Like, yeah, kind of like this NFL thing. I feel pretty good about myself. And then the vets come in, and then the humble pie gets served pretty quickly.
here's the third thing you need to know.
Hey, what do you make of this Roger Goodell proposal, Brock, to add another game, 18-game season, take away another preseason game, so you're down to two, and then add another bye week so that the Super Bowl actually gets played on President's Day weekend?
So let's see. Let's add another week and another bye, and eventually, you know, let's see if we can make this season, I don't know,
6 months long, like Major League Baseball?
Yes, let's see if we can get half the calendar rather than just September to December. Remember, like, growing up? Just kind of like September, December, regular season, and then playoffs and Super Bowl like the end of January. Like, we're going to be pushing it in, I guess, all the way through February. I'm not going to complain. Remember when February used to be a hard month in sports radio? Not anymore. Not with the NFL eating up half of it, and now maybe even more of that. This is where it's going. You know, these preseason games are going to get less and less and less. Mm-hmm. It's a non-win for players, a non-win for teams, non-win for stadiums. So let's get rid of that one. Let's lump it on the other side of it. And let's see, man, if these bodies can endure. Let's see. Tell me if quarterbacks can endure. We saw just a run on QB injuries last year, the most important position in that sport on that field. Can you play an 18-game season? And can these guys weather that kind of storm?
I guess we're going to find out. TBD. That is everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk show.
And then will you see load management, right? I mean, we'll kind of get to a point.
If we start seeing that, then you got a problem.
Yeah. I mean, I just, because you go 18, Salk, and then we saw this in the Seahawks run through those years. Yet another reason why it is so hard to be not dynastic and such a compliment. And maybe not even, I mean, we've thrown so much flowers at Mahomes, but I mean, yeah, it's 18, and then you go to the playoffs, and then it's 19, and then it's 20, and then it's 21, and then it's 22 games.
And yet, right? It doesn't feel like it's had a major impact going to 17. 18 at least would get you to an even number, which I think would be preferable. I like that a team can go 500. It's weird to me that you can't go 500. Something about that is just kind of off.
No, but you did see the impact in those Seahawk years, right? I mean, you did. You saw a bunch of careers maybe cut a little bit short, how hard it is to play, you know, at that time, 19, 20 games every year.
They were playing 17.
No, but they were playing all those playoff games. They were going to the Super Bowl. They were going to the Super Bowl. They were going to the NFC Championship. They were playing a lot of games on Avril, a lot of games on Cam, a lot of games on Ben. Those guys played a lot of games, and I think if you talk to them, certainly they would say, sign me up. Absolutely love it.
Right.
But the trade-off of it is
more opportunity for injury.
Yeah, play a whole nother for those guys in those 4 or 5 years. Played a whole nother season.
I wonder if it's wear and tear or just, just essentially a numbers game.
Yes, eventually your body, you take all these hits.
I don't think it's wear and tear so much. Maybe it is, but it kind of feels like it's more
accumulation.
Yeah, just accumulation of a higher number. Like, the more chances you're out there, the more opportunities there are to get hurt. And so eventually, the longer you play, it's a matter of when, not if. Yep. And you're just giving more chances for the wins. All right. We are 1 month in now. It's May 1st, right? So good opportunity to take stock of where your Mariners are. What are they doing well? What still needs to be improved? What have we learned about them over the course of the first month? It's time for a good check-in. We'll do it next. Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710salesports.com.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Actually, we are going to be doing some Which Is Better coming up in 30 minutes. Cal Raleigh is going to join us at 8:30. Aaron Goldsmith's going to join us later this morning as well. So a lot of fun stuff, a lot of baseball talk today. Makes sense after the Mariners win another series last night. They do it against the Braves, which is fun. They are the team that comes in with the best record. Brock, I think you made a very astute point here off the air. There's a reason Scott went for the jugular last night. He needed to win that game. You win game one, great. Game two, you are coming out and doing everything in your power once you get a lead to win that game so that you can win the series. You send Luis out for the seventh inning. You go straight to Stanek, from Stanek to Munoz. When Stanek didn't have it, you take him out probably actually one batter too late. But okay, fine. You get Munoz out there for a 5-out save, which was awesome. He's not going to pitch today. No chance. Then he gets the day off tomorrow. And guess what? If you lose today,
yep,
so be it.
Yep. And it just feels like with Emerson today, like this Braves team, you know. I mean, they hadn't lost back-to-back games all year.
Right.
Best record in baseball, right? That lineup, and all of a sudden, for them, I would imagine, I mean, I see this watching Little League, like, gosh, get this kid throwing 85 out so we can hit 70, please, right? And I'm going to imagine after seeing 96, 97, 96, 97, the top of the zone, Emerson's just, you know, different. You know, he's more 92, 93.
Yep.
And it's going to be
and maybe that'll frustrate challenge. Him because maybe. They try to overswing and it's a lot of ground ball outs and they roll over and you find a way to steal a series sweep with a game today. But you're right. I think ultimately this is Scott saying win the series. Mm-hmm. They might have the better team overall, certainly the better offensive roster, maybe the better roster in general.
Yes.
Okay. That's fine. Wow. How are we going to deploy our resources to try to win two out of three games and then move on from there? I love it. Yeah. I think it's the
is
way
Justin,
you handle it.
Justin, he's gotten to know me over the last few years. This may not surprise you, Justin. Early on, I did not understand 162-game baseball season.
Oh.
Yeah, it was really... What do you mean?
Early on what this year? What do you mean early on?
Stop.
Early on like 3 days ago? What do you mean early on?
Stop.
What do you mean by early on?
Early on.
When will you understand?
When Salk would say to me, like, no, there are sometimes you lose a battle to win the war.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't deploy all of your best assets. Sometimes you have to look at the marathon. Sometimes when you got a 20-yard lead over somebody in a sprint, there's no reason to go to an extra gear.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just continue.
Keep it on cruise control every now and
again. Yeah, rather than hobbling around to the ice cream machine so everybody could see you in the All-Star Club last night. So, but yeah, it took me a little while to understand. This is kind of the opposite. This was like, no. We deploy all our assets to win this battle today.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right? And if we end up losing this, you know, losing the final game of the series, it doesn't matter. Like, we won the series.
Yep.
And you keep winning series after series after series after series after
and
series.
And what really hurts is when you end up losing one of those games,
sure.
right? When you deploy your resources and lose, that's what stinks. You can sort of handle losing baseball games because you know you're going to lose, you know, 50, 60, 70 of them, depending on the type of season you're planning to have anyway. But when you deploy your resource, hey, I have my ace on the hill. He gave me seven shutout innings. Mm-hmm. I had my two best relievers up after that, and we still lost?
Yeah,
that's a problem.
It's momentum killer, confidence killer.
That is a killer. So good on them. So let's take a look. We're a month in. Today is May 1st, right? It's May Day. It's May 1st, and it's a good opportunity for a little check-in on where the team is at. We're nearing the point, I think, where you start to make some decisions and some judgment calls on what they are and what they're going to be. Probably another 2-3 weeks away, right? Once you get into, you know, the sort of 50-ish game mark, a third of the way through the season, I think you start to have a pretty good sense as to who the team is.
Yeah, I remember that Scott used a football analogy early in the season, talking about we're not even through the first quarter of, of a game. But, well, now you're just about 20% of the way through. So in an NFL season, you're three games in.
Yeah, you're starting to get a sense.
You are. You're starting to get a, you know, this is looks like who we could be this year. This looks like some of the identity. Now, baseball always is a much longer season, and May 31st is usually a better exercise than May 1st.
Yeah, and there is an element of baseball that changes on the day-to-day in a way that football generally does not. But, okay, some things that there's some positive and there's some negative in here for a team that has been a little bit complicated so far. First thing that I think I would have to mention, obviously, is the starting pitching. It's insane. As good as we thought it would be since that first week or 10 days of the season, it has just been unbelievable. We've gone through all these different stats. The one that jumped out to me last night, and I just think it's crazy, is that in their last 18 games, 18 straight games, their starters have not had one outing allowing more than two earned runs.
Yeah.
That's preposterous.
Yeah.
And yet, as I said earlier, it doesn't feel like any of them are doing anything well beyond what they're capable of.
And now you sprinkle the Rockies in, Salk, but also add context to that. You have faced the World Series champs. You have faced the National League champs.
Yep.
You're facing the team with the best record in baseball. So kudos to Larry Stone for that little tweet last night and that little reminder. So you're not doing this against the A's, the White Sox, the Rockies consecutively. You're facing some of the best and certainly last season's best. And you're just mowing them down.
Yeah, and this isn't by accident, right? I mean, they set about trying to build a pitching staff that could do this. Jeff Passan talked about it yesterday.
I think the Mariners are, I think they're a smart organization because they are extremely process-oriented, but they are not married to these ideals that they've developed in the course of making these players as good as they are. They just know that's what's working now and what's been working for them.
So that certainly worked in the starting rotation. I got to give them a lot of credit. The bullpen has been better than I would have expected as well. They crushed this thing. Cody Bolton is one of my favorites, man. I've really enjoyed watching him, but it's not just him. Trent Thornton's been better than at any point that we've seen him so far. I think this is the best we've seen Saucedo. Spire's been tremendous. I mean, awesome. Just an absolute swing guy that has really helped you kind of lengthen your leverage kind of situations.
Bolton pissed out that kidney stone and he continues to just rock.
Yes.
You know, no puns intended there.
That's great. Awesome. I appreciate that one. And both. And they're like, they've done a good job. They haven't been the problem. And for the most part, they've been a solution. So you got to give them a ton of credit there. While we're on the subject of credit, you know who deserves some, at least for now? Jerry's going to have to deserve a little credit here for the third base platoon. Mm-hmm. Everybody thought this was a bad idea, myself included. I was not a fan of how they were going about this. And the defense was bad at the beginning. Both guys have been better since then defensively, especially Rojas, who's really made some plays. Rojas keeps getting on base. And for whatever it's worth, Arias has had a couple of big moments with the bat, has not taken off consistently at all. But he's like helped them win two or three games when he's been in there. So I got to give Jerry some credit. Third base platoon has worked out pretty well.
If I would have told you when we left spring that on May 1st,
I know
that on May 1st, your, let's see, highest, oh no, Cal's got him a little bit in war, but certainly your OPS leader, on your baseball team by over 100 points.
It's crazy.
It's Josh Rojas.
I know.
Got 938 OPS. I mean, he's getting on base over 400. He's slugged. He's hitting home runs. He's got a 938 OPS.
But Brock, every time a good player comes here, they get bad.
That's right.
It's impossible for a bad player to come here and get good, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah,
never see that.
Baseball's weird, man. Sometimes Josh Rojas is your best player.
And remember what happened.
That's probably not going to be the case over the course of 6 months, but after 1 month, it was.
But remember at the end of spring, what was going on? You know, Scott was saying, man, this is the best I felt coming out of spring because everybody was hitting except the last 2 weeks, Rojas. Rojas started really hot. And then the last 2 weeks of spring, you know, just couldn't really find it. And now
just you cannot predict this game. This game really, it is just so freaking hard to predict. So there's a couple of huge, huge pluses. I'll throw Dylan Moore in that list. I think he's been a really big help. They need JP back, obviously, at shortstop. That's not really a position he should be asked to play every single day. But he's been a serviceable, good player for them this year, bouncing in at left field, bouncing in at shortstop, you know, using him wherever he's been needed. And I think he's had a really nice start to the season.
I was frustrated the night before. You know, I felt like that ground ball that Acuna hit in the seventh, that's a play that he could make and should make and shortstops in the league make. That play last night, though, once again, just, okay, whatever, flush that one.
Yep.
And that play last night was
great play.
Phenomenal.
Really, I mean, nice
as good
play.
As it gets.
Yeah, that's
as
really,
good as
really
it gets.
Nice play. And then there's the other side of it. I mean, there's some guys that have to pick it up. I think some of them will, maybe all of them. We'll find out. The team needs Julio to be better than this. It's not an effort thing.
Don't tell Stacy.
Well, I go back and actually listen to what Bump and Stacy have to say here. Because I think when you hear it, it's like, well, yeah, no kidding. Julio needs to be better than this. He is the centerpiece of this offense, and he's not gotten it going yet. His speed, his just sort of general ability and talent have, I think, helped his batting average at least be normal. But look, they need him to come up in big spots and get big hits and hit doubles and hit home runs, and he's not done that. Yeah, Bump and Stacy had a Leave Julio Alone segment yesterday.
A pet peeve of mine is that we start making our bar perfection. Instead of the bar is some kind of development over time. Again, it is so hard to see a bases loaded moment, watch Julio come up and see him chase and see him strike out. Because he's not wildly consistent, it's baseball.
Here's the thing with Julio. There are still some things for him to do, for him to prove. That doesn't necessarily mean that you ignore the things that he's already done.
Very good point.
You're just looking for progress. We still know that if Julio goes, this thing goes. And I think that's the pressure that he feels. That's the pressure we put on him because we see the potential of this young man. With the arms doing what they're doing, you need Julio to play better. Yes, you need Julio to play better. That doesn't mean he's not going to play better. I don't even think this team needs Julio to be a superstar. Not right now. Just be a star.
Yeah, this comes back to, you know, something, Salk, that we've said a lot. And I think our market maybe is a little more sensitive than some other markets to it. Like, you can love Julio and love him and think he's the greatest. Yet you can also be, you know, constructively critical and say, this isn't good enough. The swing and miss right now and the strikeout rate is not good enough. Like, you're sixth, seventh in the league in strikeouts, but those guys ahead of you, Schwarber and others, get on base, right? You're not walking. You're, you know, a buddy of mine whose daughter plays college softball, and he's very much into the swings and baseball and softball and was a college baseball player himself. And his wife, not so much. You know, she could care less about any sport. And he texts me. He's like, you wouldn't believe it. You know, Kelly texted me or said to me, like, why is Julio so jumpy? Like, everything is moving around in the box.
Yeah.
You know, like, she's watched a million softball games. She's watched a million baseball games. And her eye, you know, her eye, even though she didn't even like it, can look at it and go,
Even though she doesn't like it.
Something's kind of amiss there. Like, why is he falling all over himself? He's got, like, he's just disconnected. Upper body, lower body. Like, he's just, and when you're, you know, and I've kind of made this point this last month, I think when you're as big as he is, it gets accentuated.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's a reason that there are not a lot of 6'3", 230-pound golfers. There's not. There's not a lot of 6'7 golfers. Why aren't there more 6'7 golfers? Because there's a lot of moving parts, man. There is a lot going on. And
you hear that with pitchers, too. Some of the tall guys, like, hey, right. Their mechanics, when they're right, they're unbelievable, but they can get off.
But they have to work so hard. Yeah. Look at Logan, how hard he works constantly, daily.
No, I think there's a lot of that. I think they get it right there. Julio does need to be better than this. They're not going to be a good team unless Julio plays better than he has. But my assumption is that he will, and he's certainly working as on effort thing or anything
like that.
Is it a good team or a great team?
I don't know that they can be a consistently good team without a better Julio.
Okay.
They can win in spurts. Obviously, their pitching is so ridiculously good, and there will be times when Cal Raleigh carries them or JP comes back or whatever. I mean, like, there will be moments, but to be a consistently good team, you need Julio to be good. You don't need him to be, I think Bump's right, you don't need him to be the best player in baseball.
A six war player?
But you need him to be the player. Like, that's just how this team was built. And right now, fortunately, he's finding other ways to help the team. When he does get on base, he's running well. His center field play has been spectacular.
Bump did give him credit. When you listen to the whole segment, he deserves it. Mentions all that.
He's been tremendous with all that stuff because he's a wonderful human and a great baseball player.
And he cares.
He's not hitting very well right now, and they're ultimately going to need that to be better. And the same is true from Polanco and Garver. Those are your two big offseason additions from a hitting perspective, and they haven't done it yet.
Except they win the series because they are one swing of that bat.
That's right. Those two guys.
Seriously, they won the series because of those two guys.
And hopefully that's sort of a sign of the future. But it does show you how important it is. They don't need nine guys on this team to be incredible. But they do need a couple of guys to be pretty darn good. And Garver and Polanco are two that they spent some resources in trying to bring in here in the offseason. Yep. I'm going to put them pretty high on that list. Julio Rodriguez is the star on this team. He's high on the list. I'm going to expect more from the guys like that than I am from Luis Urias. That's just how I am.
I will say this. One positive with those two guys is they've been available. Right. And that was one of the really, like, over the course of the season, Salk, if there's one thing that that we said in February and another theme throughout the month of March is, well, if they can stay healthy and, you know, through the first month of the season, done a nice job. They largely have. Unfortunately, JP's not. But those guys that have been injury, you know, have had that injury bug, unfortunately, bite them over the last few years have kept that bug away.
Well, I guess the last thing I'll just say here and end it on this is that thank God Scott's as patient as he is. And thank God he's more patient than most of us are, because there was a time, 14 games ago, two weeks plus ago, where things looked pretty rough, where there were, I think, some people around town having fairly reasonable conversation about Scott's job and what it was going to look like in the future if this thing didn't get turned around. Did he panic? No. He just was Scott Service, and his team ran off 11 out of 14 games. Pretty darn impressive. Let's do some Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hanani!
All right, three good football questions for Brock every morning, 7:45. And we will come back to the baseball, by the way. Cal Raleigh joins us in 45 minutes at 8:30. Aaron Goldsmith we'll talk to later today as well. Brock, now that we're sort of into draft grading, recapping, et cetera, what was the tipping point? We talked a lot about whether, you know, the Seahawks were that tipping point. Was it going to be the number 8 pick with Atlanta? What was the tipping point?
It was the Seahawks. You know, we talked about them being at the fulcrum. Like, okay, it depends on how this draft goes. And if all these quarterbacks go, and Bump and I and Wyman on draft night, we're talking about it. Like, the best thing that can happen for the Seahawks is all these quarterbacks go. Take all 6 of them, right? And then take those 3 receivers and take a few of these tackles. And you could be sitting there at a spot at 16 with some defensive players that everybody wants. I think Brady will be in next week, Salk, for a day or so. And I've chatted with him a bunch as he continues to do his job so well, so connected, working so hard behind the scenes. And they didn't just have 4 trade opportunities. There were more than that. Those phones were ringing off the hook at about 12 and 13 and 14 the days before. Like, if this thing goes the way it's going to go. And there were a lot of people there. They were making some enticing offers at 16, Salk. But ultimately, the Seahawks had to make a decision. And ultimately, you know, there are times when they used to draft in the 20s. And we would all sit there and have some cynicism, like, yeah, come on. You didn't get the guy you want. You didn't get the best dude. You did, you know, these are now the last couple years where you got the receiver you wanted. You got the corner you wanted. You got the defender you wanted, because Latu was not, I don't think, going to be on their board from a medical standpoint, a risk standpoint. And they just could not, even with all those offers, they just could not turn away from the only defensive tackle drafted in that first round. Had they traded, Murphy's going to go right there. Murphy's going to go to somebody else, and I don't think that was palatable, even though there could have been some other resources added into the 3rd round and maybe even the late 2nd round. They were just not going to let Byron Murphy loose.
All right, question number 2. Speaking of Byron Murphy, he's going to be here this weekend for the first rookie mini camp. Rock, who are you excited to get eyes on? Who do you want to say?
You know, I think with these rookies, I've seen a bunch of them. Other than really those, obviously the linebacker Price, I have not seen, or I did a few years ago, but do not remember them. It's the corners. Like, you know, these guys were drafted to come in here and push and compete. Right, we had different people on, and I thought Mark Dominic nailed it pretty darn well. Not only did Mark Dominic love Byron Murphy, Mark Dominic said, I don't know if the staff is in love with their secondary. And just stylistically, we got into some of this over the last couple days, Salk. Stylistically, you're going to ask your corners in this scheme to be on an island, to play more man, to be up there in press coverage, to be aggressive. They're going to pressure, their pressure rate's going to go up. Some of it may be illusion. Some of it will be, hey, man, we're going to look like we're sending 7, we're sending 5. But that still leaves you in some real man-to-man coverage situations. I want to see these guys move. I think James is small and slight, but you can be small and slight. Witherspoon's small and slight, but he has a knockout factor and a knockback factor that's off the charts. So you won't see that, obviously, in rookie minicamp, but I think those corners were you know, my eyes will certainly be, and I'll have a lot of keen interest in how those guys are competing.
All right, question number 3. While that's going on, it's also spring game time for the Huskies, Brock. What are our expectations for the Huskies in the spring?
I think we're going to see some attendance numbers that won't be Deion Sanders-like in his first year in Boulder, like selling out the stadium. But they're doing this on Friday night. Friday night looks like 65 degrees, so a little bit warmer weather coming to Seattle, which will help. Might be a little moisture in the air.
Just as the Mariners head out of town, of course.
Yep. But I think there could be 30, 35, 40,000 people at that spring game on Friday night. They have done an excellent job. Their marketing team, their videography team, right? Just the selling of the product and everything that's going on. You got a quarterback battle. Who's going to replace a Michael Penix, I think, which is fascinating. You're coming off of playing in the national championship. I think there is some goodwill, and Jed can sell. And I think the program is selling pretty well. I'm kind of anxious to see Friday night's attendance numbers and what some of that buzz is, because they took a chunk, Salk. As they went on that run last year, they took a chunk becoming relevant. There's a relevancy pie in every market, and they took a big chunk of it of being really relevant in our market. Can they continue to do that with now 14 Huskies moving on to the NFL?
Good stuff. That is today's Blue 88. You doing okay today? It seems like maybe your back bothering. Like, what's going on with you? You all right? I mean, I'm limping, obviously. Everybody knows I can barely walk because of the stupid hamstring. What's
3 hours
going on with you?
Last 3 hours of mowing and edging and weeding and trimming and doing that stuff that I still convince myself I need to do. And I convince myself that I'm better for it. But then here's a text toy. Help me out here. 866-979-3776. You know, coming off of the winter, and you start to do your little cleanup mode, and you take a look at things. And I got some patches of grass. I'm like, okay, let's get it. Let's overseed this, right? It's called overseeding. Let's overseed these suckers. And I wake up this morning, and every time I look out my window, these doggone sparrows are out there, you know, eating all my seed. So what do I do?
Why aren't you asking me? I'm a little surprised that you wouldn't just start with asking your buddy Salk. I mean, it seems kind of
866-979-3776. What do you do?
Can I give you the easy answer?
I miss Cisco. Brock, Cisco was always great in these
there's
situations.
There's a very easy answer to this. And I'm surprised that it's taken you this long to figure it out. And it's actually something I'd like to do in my life, but I don't really know how to do it, and I'm not sure how much it costs. But
net gun.
No, just get turf. Quit screwing around with real grass. That's what I would like to do. I would like to never lift that lawnmower ever again. I would just like to have turf in my yard and never, ever have to try to rake or lawn mow or any of that stuff.
Yep.
What's that type of rake that you're supposed to do? It's like it's got like the big teeth.
For the mulching and the aerating and stuff. Yeah.
The aerating. I don't want to do any of that.
Uh-huh. Brock, everybody's saying scarecrow and owls.
Okay. Scarecrow or owls?
Yeah, get a fake owl or a scarecrow.
Why don't you get a real owl?
You get a real owl. Train an owl.
Why don't you train an owl? Oh, remember we were going to go falconing in Ireland?
For a hobby.
There is an owl in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I'll have feathers on my front porch sometimes, which I love.
Airy first, then top dress with topsoil, cover in peat, man. Less lawn. There's a lot of people here on the turf terrain.
Absolutely. Move out of the sticks or get turf.
Overseed, then cover it in peat moss.
Yeah, move out of the sticks.
Overseed and then peat moss.
Yeah. Okay. Cover your seeds with dirt.
Pridemore is a big peat moss guy. I tried that sometimes. Doesn't work at all. Buck you know what you got to do is just go out, get some turf. You'll be good to go. We'll be right back. We're going to play Which is Better, My Lawn or Brock's next on Brock and Salk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.